Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 543. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
It's like the countdown to coming out.
It is.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm coming out. I want the world to know. Got to let it show.
We are recording this on National Coming Out Day.
Yes, we are.
Which is October the 11th. It's the 25th anniversary. I continue to be profoundly weighted in the fact that my lifetime has been the lifetime of this movement in many, many ways. You and I,
yes,
the generation that which we are in.
30 years ago.
Yeah, the generation of which we are in. And I think I came out 22 years
well,
ago.
Well, I was two when I came out.
No, I think I came out 22 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's 22, 23?
I said that, I don't know if I told you this story. It's sort of an interesting story. On this day, I was rushing to an audition, and I didn't have very much time, and there was a young guy with a rainbow tie-dyed shirt standing on the corner collecting names and, you know, donations for...
this is today?
No, this was earlier this summer for human rights, for the human rights campaign. And he said, "Do you have time for gay rights?" And I said, "Usually I do, but I'm in a hurry, I can't." And then as I walked away, instead of a funny but snarky way, he said, "Well, what have you done for gay rights lately?" And it sort of stopped me in my tracks. And I walked up to this man who was probably 21 years old, somewhere between 19 and 21. And I said, "You know what I did for gay rights? I came out in 1983. Uh-huh. That's what I did for gay rights."
Yeah.
I've been out and loud for 30 years before one even thought about standing on the street corner as a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
It turns out he was straight.
Oh, how funny. How cute is that?
Really cute. And we ended up having a very brief, because I really was in a hurry, a very brief but sort of lovely conversation. And I think I sort of imparted to him that coming out, especially then, was its own political act.
It's a political act today.
Yes,
I mean,
I agree.
The revolution is just really one person telling another person who you authentically are. You know, that is the...
I know, I read your post.
That is the life-changing revolution, and, I mean, rooted in Harvey Milk saying,
right.
that's all we need to do. Like, to be an activist, all you have to do is say I'm gay.
Right.
That's
it. It's hard to hate someone that you already know when you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know,
and some people manage it.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, right? Because in this day and age, in this social media, totally connected Twitter, Facebook, Instagram world we live in, people can come out to lots of people, like almost everybody in their life, you know, in one posting.
or God, remember when it used to be you had to like tell individuals.
But you just how exhausting for
it
us.
It was exhausting. Because
you had to like it was so it, there was a strategy or it was just like I have to tell this again. I mean, by the time you've told it 15 times, you're like, okay, here's the memo. I'm a homosexual.
Right.
I'm gay. I'm in this relationship with this woman. You know, I mean, but the first time you tell it, it's one story, and then the 15th time you tell it, it loses a little bit of its.
Yeah. Although it's funny, I posted on Facebook today just a very brief synopsis of coming out.
To your friend Louisa.
Yeah, to my friend Louisa. And we were literally making out in my car, my Aunt Dottie's car, in front of Louisa's parents' house. And she said, I have to tell you something. I'm gay. And I said, oh, thank goodness, me too. And she said, I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. I was like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. And so then I drove to my godmother's house, who lived nearby. It was after midnight, and knocked on my godmother's door. She answered in her robe, and, I was like, what's going on? And I said, I have to talk to you.
So how old were you?
I was 17.
Uh-huh, yeah. You were in high school, senior in high school?
It was just after my senior year. Like, okay. It was like, I think school had ended like a week.
Gotcha.
It was the beginning of that summer before college. And so then I, you know, she put on coffee and made a plate of Pickies. We were just talking about it. Pickies is what she would just put together a tray of whatever goodies she had in her house, and she was an Italian mom, so half Italian, half Jewish.
Yeah.
So
there were some Pickies.
There was some good stuff in that house. The Pickies were good at Robin's. Also, best coffee ever. Anyway, so then I came out to her that same night, and I was very lucky.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have, especially then in 1980, I can't remember if it was 83, 84. It was 84, yeah. I only had a negative response from one person, and I think it was because of his own fear of his own sexuality. He was my best friend at the time, and but other than that, really, it was.
Well, you know, and it's really interesting because I probably came out, you know, less than a decade after you did, and in the South. And, you know, but I feel like, you know, today, back then, or before this internet age, which is very, very new, if we're looking at it, really, I don't mean emails, but I mean the social media, you know, world. But it was an evolution, you know, it was like you told these, like you said, like you told these friends and then you,
and then maybe you told your siblings,
and then you were, maybe if you were seeing somebody, then kind of as you met their people, they knew, and then you tell a sibling, and then, you know, that was my path, you know, told my brother, and then, you know, and it was years later before I told my parents, just because I wasn't living at home, it didn't feel necessary, but a lot of people knew before my parents knew.
Yeah, and me too. I mean, I didn't tell, and also because, you know, my, I mean, most people know this, my siblings are both queer. In varying degrees, and I told them.
Yeah. For solidarity.
For solidarity.
Sure.
And yet they weren't, they didn't, neither of them came out for another 7 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't even know if they, I mean, I think my brother knew, I don't even know if my sister sort of knew herself, you know.
Yeah.
But she's bisexual, so, but anyway, so, but they were amazing.
Yeah.
And I just was really lucky, and I have been blessed in my life to have a variety of young people. Mm-hmm. And I've told some of these stories on the podcast about, you know, people I've met on ships who sort of like avoid me because for some reason, and I, in my head, I'm like, oh, they know that I know. Of course, I'm never going to out them. And then they come out to me. And so, or just to have, like, there's a young man who's in the Midnight Circus right now who's in our show. Three more weekends. Circusintheparks.org. And this, his name is Brett, and he came out to me when he was 15. And I see him now as the, I mean, as the most extraordinary, fully realized. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And to be blessed to know that since I had such a positive coming out even back then, that I've also been able to be part of some younger people coming out to me and be part of the people who say to them, you're awesome.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
I think that's, you know, I think that's really amazing that the way in which our allies, and that was a part of my post today on Facebook, you know, the way in which our allies shore us up and fortify and mirror back to us that it's acceptable At the, and I, not that I want to be acceptable,
right?
But,
exactly right.
But that it is acceptable, and that it is extraordinary, and that it is the same, and that it is everything, you know. And it's been really, I think, through the people who are not gay that I've had that mirror that's been really impactful. And I too, you know, the first person I was in a significant relationship with, you know, was older than me, and she was just very confident and sexually had great sex self-esteem.
Like sex positive.
She was, yeah, she was just her sexuality. She had a lot of esteem around her sexuality. And I learned that. I saw that modeled, and it was modeled in the relationship as a given.
Yeah.
And so when I was in my relationship with her, it's truly to me the biggest gift of being, you know, that newly coming out person, because, you know, it was its own education of what does that mean? And I had trouble identifying. I had trouble as a lesbian, self-actualizing,
right,
I guess.
Finding your place.
Finding my place. And, you know, and this was a long time ago, but at that time, you know, really all I was confronted with were, you know, I guess a butcher type of woman,
right,
or
sure.
Not that there was anything wrong with that. I just didn't identify. You know, I've felt really feminine, and I felt really girly, and
well,
I felt really.
Judging from the pants you're wearing, you are still
one.
Feminine.
I have loud pants
she
on.
She has some. They are loud, but they're also the girliest. I mean, you are dressed right now like a 7-year-old princess.
Like purple and pink with flowers.
You are
capris.
like Samantha Jenkins from the Midnight Circus. You are the prettiest little. I'm gonna search somewhere in this room. I'm gonna see little sparkly pink flats somewhere.
They are.
You know, it's funny. Speaking of our allies, you know, I posted this thing on Facebook, just a little story, and then my best friend of almost 30 years, David, who's a straight guy. I don't hold it against him.
We love them too.
Oh my God, he's the best. And so I've talked about him many, many times. He's literally the best friend, ally, a gay boy could possibly have had in 1986 or 85 when we became friends. I mean, he was the cartoon of a frat boy, college frat boy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was also the most artistic and sensitive.
Yeah.
And so his funny response to my post was like, wait, when were you going to tell me?
Wait.
But the joke is that he has been in my corner.
Yeah.
It's funny because I've had this weird thing where my three male best friends in my life have all been named David.
Mm.
When I was younger, it was a David who I grew up with from elementary school. And then we started fooling around very young. I think a lot of boys have this experience, and we started fooling around very young and continued to fool around until we graduated high school. And then I won't say his last name because I said I'm not going to out him because he is defiantly not gay or whatever. And then we stopped being friends because my sexuality became clear, although tacit. And then my next best friend was this boy named David, and we got very close. We were a little bit older, and then I think my sexuality scared him. And then I go to college, and I meet this...
Another David. Third time's charm.
And and I think I was a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew that we were becoming really great friends very quickly, and I thought, oh... And so I was almost militant about my being out to him, you know? And... his response was like, dude, I know, chill the fuck out.
Chill out.
Who cares? You think I'm hot? I'm like, yeah, you're not my type. And so I've been, you know, to piggyback on that thing about allies, I've been so blessed to have that man in my life. And it is partly him and the allies in my life, my godmother who was straight and... And, you know, you and I have had many discussions about my feelings about religion and the church and stuff like that, and not a huge fan, and, you know, we agree to disagree, but my godmother was very Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
She converted when she got married from being Jewish to being a Catholic, and she was very Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And understood, you know, she's what we would describe as a Dolly Parton Christian. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She understood that the God that they believe in...
Yeah.
Loves us all.
Absolutely.
And so I was really blessed in that way too.
Yeah.
So to anybody,
that's the God I believe in.
I know you do. It's a good one. It's a good one. And so I guess to anyone who's sort of listening, maybe surreptitiously,
yeah,
you know, who isn't
out.
I get that there's reasons not to be out.
Sure.
Although I think sometimes those reasons are created in our head out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that there aren't valid fears,
yeah,
especially for younger people. But boy, oh boy, Amy and I are here to tell you.
It's freedom on the other side.
Yeah, it's real good over here.
I got to say, you know, two things that come to my mind when you talk about that. And I'll start with where you just were, which is I just think, you know, I've really prided myself over the years in being in the gay media and talking to GLBT people and talking face-to-face and interviewing them and also talking to being a voice that is heard on the radio or heard on a podcast, you know, and speaking to the community or and when you work in radio, there is an element, unlike in newsprint or a magazine or something like that, where you actually, I know that more closeted people listen probably to radio and podcasts and things like that because it's air.
Right.
Nobody can find that Windy City Times in your car,
right, exactly,
or in your house or see that gay book or
right,
a magazine.
And you can put on your headphones and listen to it.
That's
nobody
exactly
has to hear.
Right. Or in your car when we, you know, when Lesbian Gay Radio was on the radio. And it was to hear, you know, from a lot of closeted people. And I'm a real firm believer in not outing people and allowing people to come out in their own time. And I don't care if it's like, you know, news stories I get about Tom Cruise or John Travolta being sued, or if
right,
it's, you know, the guy down the street, you know, it is their path. Right. I don't know what it is, you know, and it's not mine to judge or mine to, you know, comment on. I have an opinion.
Sure.
I definitely think that whatever you have to navigate and walk through, that there is, you land on a shore that is golden and brighter,
right,
and yes, you may have
right,
to go through some rivers.
Feet.
Right. You may have to go through some rivers and some weather getting to the shore. But I do think, you know, we all paddle ashore and it makes us extraordinary people. And I mean that in the terms of extraordinary.
Yes.
It makes us have a different perspective on the world and allows people, it's courageous. You know, there is a courage
yes,
about it. But sometimes it takes people little bitty steps to,
sure,
to build up courage. And sometimes people make a big, bold gesture, and that's the courageous act. And you know, because my way was one way doesn't mean that has to be somebody else's way to find their own way to that path.
I think sometimes it's harder for people who, there weren't many people even
mm-hmm,
back in 1980
yeah, sure,
who didn't know I was gay on some level, even before it was explicit. So I think on some level it was easier for me.
Yeah.
Not easier, but you know what I'm saying? Where somebody like you who, mm-hmm, in the, you know, sort of parlance of the prior era of
yes,
of closetedness, could pass,
mm-hmm,
right?
Absolutely, because I mean, I definitely
you
felt like part of
very
my
long time
coming out was people used to laugh at me in my 20s, and they even had a friend of mine who posted on my Facebook page today who said, you know what I love about Amy Thiene is you meet Amy Thiene and like the next thing out of her mouth you will know she's gay.
Right.
Because I just
right,
I don't know, that's just been how
but
I've
you
done
could
it
have hidden
but I could have hidden
for
and
a very
never
long time
said
and,
anything
and so I think that there, it can be I guess I have a lot of respect for people who could hide and don't.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't have a lot of pride for the people who couldn't hide if they tried, you know,
yeah,
the Stonewall
yeah,
activists, you know,
sure,
the bull dykes and the drag queens who,
yeah,
who paved the way, you know, bless. I think about my friends who could have easily hidden for many, many years and didn't, and I think that takes an enormous amount of courage to give up the privilege of heterosexual assumption.
Yeah.
And in this world.
Interesting.
And I think it's brave.
Well, the second part I want to talk about, I'm going to just tease because we're going to break for some news and tell you what's going on in the theater scene. It's all really a lot of news and a lot of great things happening in the arts as we are deep into fall here in October. I can't believe it. Mitchell's going to be with me on the whole show today. But talking about those straight male allies and finding them when you're young, you and I will come back after the break. We talked. We watched the Glee episode today for Corey Monteith's
Farewell. I still have
Farewell.
This like, snotty tissue.
Yeah,
in my
we
head.
Both sound a little weepy because we listened to it right, watched it right before we started recording today. But you know, that show has done a really remarkable job of showing what those allies for. GLBT youth look like and what that can to model that for young people today. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and the farewell to Finn on Glee when we come back. But now we're going to break for the news and tell you what's going on in the theater scene. You ain't nothing
but a hound dog. Million Dollar Quartet, Chicago's hit rock and roll musical, is now extended through January. Relive the legendary night Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Don't miss the show the Chicago Tribune calls a hit. The Chicago Sun-Times calls the show musically dazzling from first beat to last. Million Dollar Quartet, now playing at the Apollo Theater. Visit Ticketmaster.com.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
In Chicago, there's a for sale sign hanging at Women and Children First, the 34-year-old lesbian-owned bookstore in the Andersonville neighborhood. The 3,400-square-foot store is debt-free, has a great staff, a committed manager, and a dedicated publicist. Co-owner Linda Bubon, at age 62, said the decision to sell the bookstore has been gradual.
Officials have overridden a decision by interim police chief Ruben Santiago to order two officers to march in the South Carolina Gay Pride Parade, even though they did not want to participate. Santiago had ordered a lieutenant and sergeant to join eight other officers in the parade, even though they cited religious beliefs in their opposition. However, Columbia City Manager Teresa Wilson met with Santiago and reached an agreement to make participation in the parade voluntary.
An estimated 1.4 million, or 4.3% of Latino-Latina adults, consider themselves LGBT, and 29% of Latino-Latina same-sex couples are raising children. This is all according to a new report released by the UCLA Williams Institute. In 63% of same-sex couples with a Latino-Latina partner, the other partner is not Latin. This is the case for only 32% of different-sex couples.
Lambda Legal filed a friend of the court brief with the New York Court of Appeals urging the court to reinstate the 2009 conviction of Dwight DeLee, who was found guilty of first-degree manslaughter as a hate crime in the 2008 shooting death of transgender woman Letitia Green. DeLee was also found guilty on a second count that included manslaughter, but not as a crime. DeLee's attorney appealed the verdict, arguing that the two verdicts contradicted each other and that, therefore, the conviction should be reversed, and the reversal was granted, resulting in DeLee's release from prison.
With the federal government partially shut down, the staff of the Washington Blade has been selected to join the in-town pool rotation for the White House Press Corps, becoming the first LGBT publication to take part in the duties. The duties require having a reporter monitor the president on a rotating basis to inform other members of the press about his activities.
California Governor Jerry Brown signed off on a measure designed to make it easier for transgender citizens to obtain birth certificates reflecting name and gender changes. Currently, people born in California can only get their birth certificates amended by court order, a process transgender rights advocates argued is expensive and needlessly invasive since a legal notice of the request to change has to be published in a newspaper. Judges will still have to sign off on a name change, but will be able to do so without holding a formal hearing. Also, the legal notice requirement will be eliminated.
A rainbow banner modeled on the American flag has been recovered after being stolen from an LGBT History Month exhibit inside a library at Middle Tennessee State University, or MTSU, in Murfreesboro. MTSU police caught the thief. A student allegedly committed the theft of the flag, which was part of a display commemorating the school's LGBT group MT Lambda's 25th anniversary on the MTSU campus.
A newly married same-sex couple is fighting the Georgia Department of Driver Services. Lesbian couple Danielle McCollum and Shakira Tucker were legally married in Massachusetts. However, Georgia refused to put the new married name of one of the women on her driver's license. The couple held a press conference outside of the DMV in Sandy Springs, Georgia, before returning Tucker's revoked driver's license and delivering more than 10,000 online signatures to the Georgia Department of Driver Services.
Hillsdale College basketball player Derek Schell publicly came out, becoming the first Division II basketball player to do so. Schell said that his decision to come out has reignited his love for the game he has cherished since childhood.
Senator Charlotte Tavares, a Democratic state legislator from Columbus, wants to make Ohio the next state to ban licensed counselors from trying to change a youth's sexual orientation. California banned sexual orientation therapy last year for anyone younger than 18. In August, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a Republican, signed a similar law. Tavares said her bill more closely mirrors the New Jersey law, leaving penalties up to professional licensing boards.
An Oregon man walking across the country to bring attention to the issue of bullying after his gay son committed suicide was struck and killed by a big rig in Colorado. Joseph Bell, age 48, started his walk from Oregon to New York in April. His 15-year-old son, Jaden Bell, killed himself earlier this year after relentless bullying at school and social media over his sexuality. Investigators believe the rig's driver, 49-year-old Kenneth Raven, fell asleep while driving. Raven was not injured in the crash.
Two openly gay Illinois students have made national history as homecoming king and queen at their high school. Eric Irizarry and Ariana Rice both won the titles at Waukegan High School in Waukegan, Illinois.
Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's administration is asking a court to consider an emergency appeal in its effort to delay the start of same-sex marriages in the state. A state judge refused to delay her order that New Jersey grant marriage licenses for same-sex couples starting October 21st.
In world news, the Kingdom of Kuwait is planning to identify LGBT people through medical screening tests and bar them from setting foot inside the country and its neighbors. According to the Kuwaiti Health Ministry, Director of Public Health, routine clinical screenings of those entering the Gulf Cooperation Council, or GCC, countries will soon include tests to detect LGBT people and keep them from entering. Same-sex acts are illegal in all GCC member states, including Kuwait, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, with those found guilty facing a possible jail sentence of up to 10 years if they are under 21.
A peaceful protest took place as the Olympic flame was handed to organizers of the Sochi Winter Olympics in a ceremony in Athens, Greece, the site of the first modern summer games. A few dozen activists at the Acropolis staged a peaceful protest against Russia's law banning gay propaganda. After a seven-day run through Greece, the flame will cover 40,000 miles on Russian soil, culminating February 7th in Sochi, Russia.
After 7 weeks in brutal conditions, a gay filmmaker who was imprisoned in Egypt was finally released. Canadian filmmaker John Grayson, along with Dr. Tarek Lubani, was arrested in August after coming to the aid of citizens wounded in protests. No explanation for the release or imprisonment has yet to be given.
Paris, France was awarded the rights to host Gay Games 10 in 2018. Paris won bids over Limerick, Ireland, and London.
Spencer Livermore, 38, who has been called the most powerful gay man in British politics, has been appointed Labour Party's general election campaign director. He was director of strategy to former Labour Prime Minister Gordon Brown until 2008 and played a critical role in Labour's successful general election campaigns of 1997, 2001, and 2005.
The International Gay and Lesbian Travel Association will host its 33rd annual global convention in Cape Town, South Africa in 2016. This marks the first time IGLTA will hold its educational and networking conference in an African country in its 30-year history. South Africa became the world's first country to enact a constitutional ban against discrimination based on sexual orientation in 1996 and is considered the most progressive country on the continent for LGBT issues. The 2014 convention will be in Madrid.
In entertainment news, lesbian soccer star Abby Wambach wed her longtime girlfriend, soccer player Sarah Huffman, in Hawaii. Huffman was a soccer star at the University of Virginia and has played in various professional leagues since graduating in 2005. She and Wambach are currently teammates on the Western New York Flash.
Julianne Moore has received her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The Oscar nominee and Emmy and Golden Globe winner's highlights include her portrayal of Sarah Palin in Game Change, as well as playing queer in The Kids Are All Right, The Private Lives of Pippa Lee, and The Hours. Moore next takes on the role of Carrie White's abusive, evangelical telekinetic mother in Kimberly Pierce's remake of Carrie.
T.R. Knight, the gay actor formerly of TV's Grey's Anatomy, has tied the knot with his longtime boyfriend. Knight is currently appearing as Mercutio in an off-Broadway production of Romeo and Juliet.
Actress Dot Marie Jones, coach Beast on the TV series Glee, proposed to her longtime girlfriend Bridget Castine. Castine met Jones 3 years ago in December.
Elton John has released The Diving Board, his first solo studio album in 7 years. Produced by T-Bone Burnett, the album features 12 new songs written by Elton and his longtime lyricist Bernie Taupin, as well as 3 piano interludes composed by the artist.
Jodie Foster and her reported new girlfriend, Alexandra Hedison, stepped out in public at an L.A. gala and were then spotted the next morning sharing an intimate breakfast. The 50-year-old Oscar-winning actress and the 44-year-old photographer Hedison, who previously dated Ellen DeGeneres, are said to have been dating for several months.
And Oprah Winfrey has made October 27th a night of special gay programming on her network, OWN. She will start with Oprah's Next Chapter, focused on being gay in Hollywood, and it will feature a conversation with Wanda Sykes, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and Dan Jutatinsky. Then, the network will premiere the documentary Bridegroom, which tells the real-life story of gay couple Shane Bittany Crone and the film's namesake, Tom Bridegroom. Bridegroom will be out on DVD November 19th. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Ballet meets Bollywood in the Joffrey Ballet premiere of La Baya Dare, The Temple Dancer, choreographed by Stanton Welch, with a magnificent score by Ludwig Minkus, arranged by John Lanchberry. Set in India, this visually stunning tale of mystery, vengeance, and eternal love features live snakes, gorgeous costumes, lavish sets, and breathtaking dancing. This is truly one of the greatest 19th century ballets, highlighted by the Kingdom of Shades scene, one of the most mesmerizing classical performances in all of ballet. Don't miss the Joffrey Ballet premiere of La Baya Dare, The Temple Dancer, October 16th through the 27th. At the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University. Tickets start at just $31. Call 800-982-2787 or visit joffrey.org.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Get it on.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 14th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Escape ordinary, experience extraordinary. Following a record-breaking 50th anniversary season, Giordano Dance Chicago returns to the Harris Theater for Music and Dance for another electrifying season of performances October 25th and 26th, with world premieres by Roni Koresh and by GDC resident choreographer Autumn Ekman, as well as audience favorites. Get your tickets at harristheaterchicago.org.
The Tony Award-winning Miss Saigon is coming to Aurora. From the creators of Les Miserables comes this passionate story of love, loss, war, and family. Filled with intense imagery and unforgettable orchestrations, experience what critics have called better than Broadway. Experience a Paramount Theater production. Miss Saigon opens October 30th. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com.
Dive headlong into a theatrical fable that celebrates the power of imagination. The Old Man and the Old Moon is an epic new mythology about a man whose job it is to collect spilled light to refill the leaking moon. Resonant storytelling, spirited indie folk music, and inventive puppetry from Pigpen Theater Company create a theatrical experience you don't want to miss. The Old Man and the Moon is playing now at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from Chicago on the Edens or the Metra. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater season kicks off with Cyrano de Bergerac. star of stage and screen, Harry Groner plays the nobleman whose gift for romance is shadowed by an all-too-prominent nose. This sweeping production features stunning swordplay and some of the most witty, touching lines ever written. Get your tickets at chicagoshakes.com. Cyrano de Bergerac is playing now through November 10th.
Comedian, actress, activist Janine Garofalo performs stand-up comedy at Main Stage October 18th and 19th. Janine was co-creator of liberal radio network Air America and starred in films Wet Hot American Summer and The Truth About Cats and Dogs. Tickets are on sale now for Janine Garofalo at mayne-stage.com.
Winner of the Great Gay Play Contest, Directions for Restoring the Apparently Dead by Martin Casella is an intriguing drama by one of America's rising playwrights. Two men, one straight, one gay, who have been lifelong friends, take a trip to the English Lake Country. What happens next will surprise, delight, and move you. For tickets, visit stage773.com. Directions for Restoring the Apparently Dead from Pride Films and Plays is at stage 773, 1225 West Belmont through November 10th. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Not really her style. And they all got the same heartbeat, but hers is falling behind. Nothing in this world could ever bring them down. Yeah, they're invincible, and she's just in the background. And she says, I wish they.
So right before we broke for the news, I was saying that Mitchell and I sat and watched the Farewell Finn episode of Glee together, and we were just talking about, as well, having models of things that I feel like the universe brought to each of us, mm-hmm. you know, in high school.
Yeah.
You dated Louisa, yeah. You both came out, I dated Jerry Dye, right. We both came out.
Right, we have that in common.
We have lots of things in common.
I forgot that we have that in common.
Yeah, and... you know, but how wonderful that this, I mean, first of all, that Glee episode was just...
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was beautiful and sad and,
you know,
and powerful and made me weep.
A friend of mine commented on Facebook last night that he was... I didn't, you know, I wanted to watch it with you, so I didn't watch it, but he commented, and I think he said something. He's a much younger friend.
Uh-huh.
And so he's sort of grown up.
Yep, on Glee.
Right, because he's only in his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And he said last night on his Facebook post, he said, I know that it's, you know, he sort of made a disclaimer, said, I know that it's goofy and that he described himself as a Gleek. He said, but this is very hard for me and my friends because we really feel like we've lost a friend.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true for a lot of people. I mean, I think older people and, you know, the show can be goofy or whatever. I understand that. But I do think that... It was important to make for people because that show has meant a lot to a lot of people, gay, straight, otherwise, yeah. Misfit, outsider, insider, the football player who wants to dance,
the jock,
sing,
the quarterback,
all
the
of
most
those,
popular
all
boy.
Those archetypes that they've explored on that show, in seriousness and in silliness.
Yeah.
I do think that it felt like they lost,
yeah.
We all lost a friend, and I feel like I lost a little brother, and...
Well, and it's really, you know, what I was thinking in watching it, besides, like, I can't breathe because I was crying. Well, you know, you have the thought of, like, they're the actors mourning.
I love that biographical, like, each of them had a little monologue
yeah.
that you could tell was partially autobiographical. I have to give it up to the writers of the
yeah.
show. Ian Brennan, who I actually know from a long time ago, but...
And Ryan Murphy.
And Ryan Murphy. And two, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but it seems like there was some input in the story that each person got to tell because it seemed very autobiographical on each person's
part.
Well,
it just felt to me like, you know, they're it's like meta theatrical,
yes.
right? Like they're mourning Corey Monteith, who was their, you know, their colleague and fellow actor, and then they're mourning a character that won't be a part of their unit, you know, because the show is going to continue. And I just thought, you know, it is really interesting. I mean, even though maybe it wasn't the most interesting storyline in the show, but the reality of, you know, a character, like the people who had the most time, right? We were saying like the Santana character and the Puckerman character, right. You know, really wasn't who had the most time was Kurt Hummel, right. Or even Rachel Berry, right. You know, because in some way, you know, what we realize is the reflection on, you know, those other people were like to be a better person or to be a more esteemed person.
Mm-hmm. Because in his eyes, they felt better.
And because he was such the leader, right? I mean, that character was such a leader. It's like a true, once again, it's kind of a meta subject on top of it, but was just like, you know, sometimes we have to become the leaders then. You know, people leave and then we have to be the leader. The people leave and we have to be the good person in the room. Like, the space is created for us then to be that thing because the other person held that space. And when that other person goes away, we have to fill that space. Or we have a choice to fill that space or not. And I thought that was a super important message for kids.
Yeah.
You know, maturity. I mean, that's a maturity question.
The coach says... to be honest, not the best acted scene in the show, but beautifully written, I think.
Yeah.
Where the coach says to Puckerman, "Well, then you have to be this person that Finn saw you as.
You have to be the quarterback. You have to be your own quarterback.
You have to be your own quarterback." And I love that. I also noticed, and I just actually as we're talking, I'm thinking about how I was talking about my best friend David earlier, and what a warrior he's always been for me, and hopefully vice versa. But from my perspective, there was a beautifully acted scene with Kurt and Bert and Finn's mother.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, Michael O'Malley is a friend of mine, so I'm biased, but he's so fucking brilliant. But anyway.
He's so great on that show, though, to give the... Because he, to me, led the way for how Finn was going to be. But it was a mirrored back-and-forth relationship, right?
And there's a point where Kurt said, when Finn would walk down the hallway, it was like...
Superman.
He was like Superman. Yeah. And Kurt is this sort of, at the time, was this sort of more fragile despite his
ferocity of fashion sense.
Exactly. boy, you know. And somebody big and football-y like Finn or like David, you know, he really, for a generation, just speaking for the LGBT community, right?
Yeah.
For a generation, it made a lot of kids understand that there was that guy, that there could be that guy who could be your Superman, who could be your hero and your warrior. And I know it's true because I have it.
Yeah.
It's 30 years later, I still have it.
Yeah.
And that I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful in the relationship between Finn and Kurt that I'm glad got said.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's it, right? I mean, anybody who's maybe read Michael Chabon's, which I think is one of the best books ever, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is really about...
One of my favorites.
It's about, you know, young men after a time, you know, war and, you know, needing those good men.
Yeah.
And that's how the comic book...
Right, the heroes.
Heroes came about, you know, and oftentimes they were men putting on... They were real men. Putting on, besides Superman,
right.
But they were real. Some of the ones that started becoming were like real men who were masked or cape crusaders or whatever. You know,
we need our heroes, and
I love that they didn't make Finn or Corey a hero based on how he died. Like that doesn't take away his life. You know how he died.
In a voiceover, Kurt says it at the beginning. You know, he says people keep wanting to talk about
how he died.
How he died, and I don't want to talk about that.
That's
a moment in his life. I want to talk about how he lived, and I thought that was really beautiful too. Also, can we talk about really the most important thing, which is how gorgeous Santana is?
What is her
actress's name? Is like Naya Rivera. Is that her name?
Naya Rivera.
Sweet. She needs to be a bigger star.
She needs to be a big star. Do we need to be her agents? I think so. Because what I love is that on the episode. Last week's episode, I watched it specifically because I thought last week was when they were going to have Cory Monteith stuff on. And what they did do was they announced Demi Lovato this new lesbian in New York who's working at the same place where she and Rachel Berry and now Kurt are all working. little diner in Manhattan. And, you know, they're obviously showing that she has an interest in Santana, and Santana walked her home and they sang a little song. And then, you know, there was kind of a gesture by Santana of like, are we continuing this? And she was like, yes, but not now. And like, you know, kind of walked up the steps. And I kind of liked that it was not coy. It was respectful and so, it was mature and it was really cool.
Demi Lozado.
So Demi Lozado, Lesbado. I like Demi Lovato. Great. I think it's really, really cool, and so I love that she's coming on because she's just a real, I think she's a real self-assured gal. I like her.
Well, she's come through a lot at a young age.
Absolutely.
It sort of comes on the heels, too. All this stuff about our allies and stuff comes on the heels of just yesterday, I think I read, or the day before, Josh Hutcherson, who from Kids Are All Right and from The Hunger Games.
Of course, I mean,
The Hunger
PETA.
Games made him a big star. Said, you know, sort of came out as a straight guy who, I mean, he has already started a foundation about like, you know, being an ally, a straight ally.
I think he did that during Kids Are All Right.
Yeah, he did. And but he said something so interesting about like, you know, right. He said something like, right now I can say that I'm 100% straight, but I don't. He's like, who knows? One day I might meet a guy and be like, whoa, this is the best guy ever. He said, you know, I meet guys all the time who I think are gorgeous. I don't want to kiss them right now, but I.
Who knows?
He said, I think it would be short-sighted and maybe limiting to say that I never will, which, you know, I think that's a, when I reposted that on Facebook, I said, you know, we can say what we want about the millennials. Yeah. There's a lot of like criticism of the millennials, but they've got that right.
They do. Andrew Garfield saying, why can't Spider-Man be bisexual? Why couldn't he have a boyfriend?
Right. Yeah. They call themselves the mostly straights.
I love it.
And so like, there's something, something really beautiful about that. Like he's, I don't think that he came out. I don't think that he's going to come out.
No.
Who knows? I think there's somebody wrote in response to that post, like, anybody that he dates from now on better be careful of the gang of gays who tried to kill her.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it is now just kind of a voicing that I'm straight, not narrow.
Yes.
And I think you would have heard people say, well, I'm not prejudiced or I'm not biased. But somebody to say, it's within the realm of possibility, as opposed to being like, well, I could never.
Right.
I could never. Probability. But...
Right. Not probability, but possibility, right.
Absolutely. Not feeling like there needs to be such a line in the sand. Like, what am I scared of? What am I scared of? I love that. I love the lack of fear. And I think that's really it. You know, the thing that keeps us in bondage is the fear of what society will think about us, or will it be hard for us, or our families, or our parents, or our coworkers.
I used to talk about it all the time. I remember a very good friend of mine, this was a long time ago, this was before I even moved to Chicago, and she was an older friend, a brilliant woman named Wendy, and you know, she had two kids, and she asked me if I thought either of her kids were gay.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I don't think so. Why? And she said, I just worry. This is a long time ago. This is like early 90s, late 80s. And I said, well, what are you worried about? And she said, well, I just worry. You know, she was a very neurotic Jewish lady. She was a brilliant woman and had a, you know, million gay friends. She had just worried about how hard it would be. And I've been sort of championing this point for a long time, that part of what makes it difficult is that attitude.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you think kids, it's going to be difficult or you're worried for them.
Yes, kids feel your anxiety. Even when they're 8 and you're worried that they may or may not be. It's funny. We were at family dinner with the Midnight Circus. I'm not sure I told you this. Uh-uh. We have family dinner with Midnight Circus every week where the whole cast gets together and we have a potluck and it's glorious. And we play trivia games. And a couple weeks ago, Max, who's the who's 8, who's in the show, and he's the child of the circus, he announced that there was going to be a dance performance that he had choreographed, which is in and of itself a genius. And so proceeded to do this incredibly intricate dance that he had choreographed, and complete with scarves. And the funny thing was, at one point I looked over at his dad, and in my head I was like, I wonder... You know, Max is 8, so it's not like he's declared a sexuality. Although I knew when I was like 6. But I'm not even sure. I'm not sure Max is there. The point was, I looked over at his dad, right? And I looked at his dad with and Jeff just sort of went,
I don't know.
He's like,
We'll see.
And that, even being able to have that sort of like casual, just a humph kind of moment, I think is progress.
As we're honoring the 25th anniversary of National Coming Out Day, You know, I'm also aware that tomorrow, which is not today, obviously, but tomorrow on October 12th is the 15th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death, which means he would have been 36 years old. It's really, really fascinating. And I get emails from the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and Dennis Shepard, his dad, wrote this beautiful, you know, letter of just like... just what it was like coming back, and mostly about coming back to the trial. And because his father was stationed in Saudi Arabia, I believe, and flew back in for the trial, for the sentencing, and all of this kind of thing. You know, and obviously Matthew Shepard has become a face for young people and hate crimes and hate crime legislation and bullying and all kinds of things, you know. But it is interesting how that story, you know, continues within families and family legacies. And two stories to me are really interesting, happening now, 15 years later, at University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, mm-hmm. Ole Miss, on their campus a couple weeks ago. They were putting on a production of the Laramie Project, which is about the town of Laramie responding to Matthew Shepard's murder and the trial. And really, there's not that many gay characters in it. There's no sexual content in the play. It's a bunch of straight people in a small town trying to talk about this young gay kid being killed.
Right.
And then his subsequent trial and the two young boys who killed him.
Yes.
You know, and how that ripped apart a town. These three young men, you know, their lives being forever changed.
Yep.
And at this one of these performances of the Laramie Project at Ole Miss, a bunch of football players from the Ole Miss team were there. They weren't the only people there, but they were there. And there was all of this heckling that started and yelling to the stage and all this disrespectful language to where they, I believe they even had to stop the show. The director of the play, you know, called one of the athletic directors, athletic coaches to come after intermission. You know, and it's just... I mean, I'm a Southerner, so it's not lost on me. I mean, this area of Mississippi also with James Byrd, you know, the hate crime legislation mm-hmm. was for James Byrd, a black man, mm-hmm. and Matthew Shepard, a gay man. But just that there is still so much work to do about the fear and hate speech. And I loved one of the young kids that was in the cast of this play who was gay. I don't know if he was playing gay parts or not, because mm-hmm. there's like 45 roles in a cast of eight. Like, it's a cast of eight, and there's a handful of gay people only, that's it, who are voiced in the show. Matthew Shepard's not even a character in the show. But there was the only gay, openly gay cast member, and he just said, you know, look, he basically was saying, I don't know whether or not they should be suspended, because some people are saying these football players should uh-huh. be suspended, and I think that there should just be some huge campus-wide forums and discussions about this, you know, and definitely some education for these people that would have gone to
a lot of people are saying that the education needs to start with the athletic directors and the professors.
Well, there you
and
go.
I say yes to that, and I also say, and this is something that I've talked about until I'm blue in the face, about these boys, whether it was the football players or other people in the audience,
yeah,
but spurred on by each other,
yeah,
it's their dads.
It's men.
Sorry, it's their dads.
It's men. It wasn't a bunch of women.
It wasn't a bunch of ladies doing it.
Yelling at the stage.
We just call it out. And that's why when I have this moment with Jeff about yep. his 8-year-old's potential yeah. to be a gay man, or I see my best friend David and the way he's raised his daughters
yep.
and what they know about the world,
yep.
I think that they are unfortunately still the exception.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, for sure, I know I record a podcast on my couch often mm-hmm. with openly gay, fabulously so, esteemable people, mm-hmm. even if we have diverse backgrounds,
right.
you know. And I understand there is a bubble. I mean, it's the Under the Dome of Stephen King's television series. Like, we right. live in right. a we gay do. Bubble that is Andersonville or Lakeview or Chicago. Or even Illinois in some extent, you know.
Or education
or family support
or education or economic status.
I understand there's a bubble. But when something like this happens in a university, a state university, you know, a university that has the name of a state, you know, Ole Miss, you know.
Here's what I'm just going to, I guess what I'm going to say about that, and I'm going to sort of say boldly. We talked earlier about, and I agree with you about not outing people unless someone's doing something specific to hurt our community and they're gay. They need to be outed. Yeah. Like what was his name? Larry, what was the senator who's like so anti-gay? Craig. Larry Craig. Fuck you. You're gay. Anyway, I'll make a billboard about it. So that's different. But yes, everybody has their own time. But I do think, and we've talked about this too, if there are people in your life, whether it's your dad or your grandpa or your uncle or the dude you work with, and they say something
homophobic
or hateful in any way, misogynistic, racist, right, whatever, silence is tacit approval.
It is absolutely.
And so I guess I'm going to challenge everyone to say, you know what, Grandpa, I love you, and I get that you're from a different era. I don't care.
Yep.
It's not that era anymore. And in the same way that time only moves forward, you can only move forward.
Yep.
And it's, and or if it's your coworker, or it's your kids,
right?
If it's your kids' friends, parents,
absolutely.
We need to say to people, that's unacceptable behavior.
Absolutely.
That's an unacceptable thing to say.
Yep.
And you need to really think about what you're saying. And if that makes you unpopular, oh well.
Yeah, omission is definitely worse.
Yes.
To me, I'd rather know that my enemies are my
standing,
enemies,
right,
and standing beside me,
right,
and I can go, right, I get you.
We disagree. Isn't the same carpool line that my
friends disagree.
Are
in? And you know, and that really takes to a really interesting story, and then we've kind of got to wrap up, but which was this story that circulated around social media of a daughter who disowned her gay son when he came out, and then the grandfather
Amazing.
Disowned his daughter for disowning his grandson,
right,
and basically wrote this letter, which was just like, you know, who are you? And if that's the way you believe this should go down, then I disown you,
right,
you know?
And he got some sort of crap, and I just want to point this out. He got a little crap in response from people who got defensive, right, about, well, then he shouldn't disown her if he's saying it wasn't right to, and he was making a point by
he
using
was
the
making
word.
A point.
And so
only thing I said is he probably shouldn't have called her a biatch. But but I don't know how old he is. He may be hip down with it, 50-year-old grandfather, as
I think
to
he was making
grandfather.
A point.
He was making
that,
a point.
That what this looks like, that sort of hateful,
unconditional love.
Right. It's like, then I'm going to reserve my unconditional love from you.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was making a very smart
he
point.
Was.
It was a dramatic point, but I think he was making a very smart point to say, you know what, my grandson will come live with me. Mm-hmm. He will be mine, and you are now out of my life.
I liked his flair for the dramatic. And
I did
thought,
too.
You know what? That's a little Mitchell Fane. That's what Mitchell would do.
You,
Mitchell is
either,
on the podcast to make points often, and
I know.
Appreciate
you're
it.
Either calling me brave or very old.
I'm not calling you either. I'm calling you absolutely perfect and
Aww.
Extraordinary and happy National Coming Out Day.
To you as well, my dear.
And then we will continue to hold up the memory of Matthew Shepard on tomorrow and everything that he did in a way that you can be out and proud. Oh, you do not have to be gay. You could just be out and proud for gay people and GLBT right. people. A way that you can commemorate someone like Matthew Shepard and honor his legacy and honor his life. The way that you can just be a part of life going forward, as Mitchell said, is to come and support the March on Springfield that is happening on Tuesday, October 22nd. Mitchell and I will be there. We mm-hmm. will be podcasting. It is going to be historic. There is information at marchonspringfield.org. We will have that in our show notes. And our next show will be coming out early so we can encourage you and give you information about the march. And how you can come and be a part of it. Amtrak's got some weird stuff that's going on, so they're trying to get people different ways to get down there. Or maybe they're telling them to go to Amtrak. We'll get the information by the next show. But anyhow, I know there's lots of groups coming down from Chicago. Tell your boss, please give me this day off and don't penalize yeah. me for work that I am going down to march for equal rights.
Because it's American.
Because it's American. It's highly American to
it
march
is.
Peacefully and go to Springfield. The veto session will be back in and we're going to be there and we're going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of people strong, hopefully, in the state of Illinois. So please, please, if you're hearing this and there's a part of you that goes, oh, maybe I should do that. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. Just go to the
amazing.
Website, and I think you don't want to miss this. You want to be a part of it. And so our whole show next week will be about the March on Springfield, and then we will be bringing you a podcast from the march. So you know, let this National Coming Out Day and the memory of Matthew Shepard 15 years later hopefully ignite you to make your plans and plan to be there Tuesday, October 22nd in Springfield. Rally some friends and hop in a car.
It's great out here.
It's going to be great out here, and it is great out here. Yeah. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.